But it was such a, you know, as the years went by, it was so remarkable to see it just so consistent. And I've thought so many times what a perfect model that was, and how often we just treat each other. You know, the closest people in our lives, the ones who are the most important to us, we just treat each other like, don't forget the dry cleaning, you know, like that's the only role they have in your life is to pick up your blouses or something like that. Do you understand what I mean? And it sounds so simple, but you see, there's so many lessons implied in that. There's number one, very simple one, you have to stay awake. You have to always be awake. You have to always actually know that there's somebody else in front of you. You can't just like get into the habit, as I quoted Rick before, as Rick put it so succinctly once, treating another person like they're an extension of your own mind, right? And you have to always remember that this is a relationship of friendship. It doesn't matter if we've been married for 50 years. It makes no difference. We are together by choice. And at any point, you know, it doesn't, I mean, it's not that it's about to dissolve, but it's always completely free. Always completely free. And of course, the more you treat each other like that, the more the chances are you will stay together because it's so much more fun. And that also allows other people to surprise you. And therefore, they stay more interesting too because you're always just sort of like waiting to see. David sort of plays games with me. It's partly a factor that he pays very little attention to himself. He doesn't love to just sort of mull over his own reality like some people do. And he has a somewhat of a poor memory, or at least he seems to, but I think mostly he forgets the things that he doesn't care about. So he's always surprising me. I recall after we'd been together maybe 10 years, we were just somewhere where a deck of cards was put in his hand. And all of a sudden, he demonstrated this tremendous skill at shuffling. You know, and it was like, did you play cards a lot? And he says, oh, as children, we played all the time. And, you know, shuffles like a master. I mean, it's a small thing. It's a very small thing. But it's sort of like, it reminds you, I don't know everything about this person. And not only years before you met, maybe you met when you were children and you've always known each other. But nonetheless, you don't ever know everything about someone. But you will feel that you do if you treat them as if you do. You see? And Swami, you know, has the simple rule here, show appreciation. And as I was coming up the stairs, Don asked me, I'll repeat your question. Don says, what do you say if she says, how do I look, dear? I says, say, you never looked more beautiful, believe me. Don then said, well, you know, what about the question of being sincere? But I was only half kidding. In fact, I wasn't kidding at all. In fact, I was reflecting on this recently. It's just astonishing, you know, no matter who you are, it's just so nice to feel that the person you love thinks that you're wonderful. You never grow tired of it, but it does have to be. It can't be, oh, whenever she asks, I say she looks nice. You know, how do I look here? Oh, you look really great, you know, like this. But there is also just this real appreciation where you really look at someone and appreciate them. You can tell them that they look wonderful, and then you can mention that, you know, that's not the most beautiful dress that I've ever seen before. But it's interesting. Swami at one point gave some interesting advice, which I've watched in myself. He says, you know, when she's just been shopping, and this is, you know, female to male energy here usually, she's just been shopping. It's so hard to buy women's clothes. I'm always trying to explain to David what a nightmare it is to buy women's clothes. You finally find something that isn't horrible. And you bring it home, it's been a whole day's job, it wasn't too expensive, and now you have it, and you say, well, do you like it? I mean, you want it to be okay. You don't want a real honest answer at that point. Because it's just so deflating. And Swami just put it, if she's been shopping all day and she just bought it, she wants you to like it. And it's more important to flow with the energy than it is always to be factual. Now, that doesn't mean that you tell her you like this $150 dress when you're going to hate it every time she puts it on. But Swamiji has a marvelous knack for not deflating your enthusiasm, you know? And that's more what it is. I can't tell you the number of times David has this wonderful phrase. David is, like, so exact. He's the most exact person I've ever known. He's so exact. I mean, he'll wait 5 years to buy, he did wait 5 years to buy a sports jacket because he just didn't find one he liked. Do You know, and he's right. You know, everything in his closet is perfect. Me, it's like, you know, I need it today. If it's not too expensive and it's all right, it's okay with me. David has this wonderful phrase called, "Well, it's fine, but it's nothing special." I've grown to hate that phrase. Finally, he doesn't use it anymore. He used it for years. To him, he was just answering, "Well, it's fine, but it's nothing special." Honey, nothing is special enough for you. But I realized I really didn't want to know. At least I didn't want to know right away. I wanted to know that the color was nice. You know, it was a good bargain. Oh, well, I'm glad you finally found something. You must have been glad that you finally found something. You know, then little by little, instead of just, "How do you like it?" I don't. Whap, like that. Oh, there you go. But Swami remarks in one of the readings, the Sunday readings, on ahimsa, which is nonviolence, you know, and we normally think of it as pacifism or Gandhiism or something like that. But Swami remarks about how killing a person's enthusiasm is contrary to the practice of ahimsa. Isn't that interesting? And I finally put it together, and I mean, believe me, this is not a big trauma. When I was a nun, I just really looked forward to getting fatter and more plain as the years went by, and then I got married instead. I was speaking last week, I was speaking the truth, you know. If you're in these relationships, you have to put out energy into them. But I don't naturally look toward these things. But I really began to watch the degree to which his just simple, honest answers would just spin me out, right? And it was one of those very instructive situations that I've talked about in here where I would have these big emotional reactions when he had put no energy into it. He didn't mean anything except it was fine, it's just nothing special. That's all he meant. To me, it would just wound me. You know, I would just go into hysterics about how hard it is to shop and how I don't really have any taste and I can't help it if I'm getting old. You know, these things would happen. And all he would have said was, "Well, it's nice, but it's nothing special." It meant zip to him. But I began to see it in terms of that question of enthusiasm. And that's a very, very fragile, that's a very fragile reality to be able to keep a person having confidence and energy to go forward. I mean, I'm making it all about clothes. But there's just lots and lots of situations in our lives where, as Swami says it, it's so perfect, the sentences he uses. Think less about how you are going to declare yourself and more about how what you say is going to be received. Do you see what I mean? And we all think about how we're going to declare ourselves, and we think very little about how it's really going to be received. So when she asks him, "How do you like this dress?" he just answers. He doesn't necessarily sort of see how eager she is for him to like it. Or he doesn't think about the fact that she spent all day looking for it, or that the party is tomorrow night, and if he doesn't like it, what is she going to do? You know, just sort of like all the levels. Or just how completely frumpy and awful she's feeling, and she just needs to know that somebody still thinks she's beautiful. Now, a person can't always know all of these things, but a person can know more of these things if we just take that split second to try to consider that this is a free relationship. This isn't a relationship in which I can just assume and do anything I want, you know? You just take the minute. Well, let me see it. You know, show me. Where did you get it? You ask questions. I mean, I'm playing this dress to the absolute nth. But in many circumstances, when somebody asks you something, take the time to find out where they're coming from before you just tell them what you think. Think less about declaring yourself and more about how they're going to receive it. And if you don't know how they're going to receive it, take the time to find out. Because you may get some clues that tell you that your first impulse was really not the right impulse. You know, and these sound so simple when you say them. This is what we do in business. This is what we do with strangers. This is what we do with children. This is what we do in teaching. This is what we don't do in marriage. Now, somebody tell me why. Because we run out of gas. And then we're upset that our primary relationship has also gotten sour because we've stopped putting energy into it. It's just the tremendous delusion of life is that we can put less and less energy into something and it will still give us more and more energy back. Duh. you know. But in fact, that's what happens. Now, that doesn't mean, and it is true, you know, there's also just a relaxed familiarity. People, you know, you live with someone for a long time. I joke with David sometimes because he's always there, you know. No matter how late it is, he's just still there. Honey, don't you have any place to go? Don't you have any other friends? And I don't mean that, like, he doesn't ever leave the house, but, you know, it's 10, 11, 12, and he's still there. But there is this constancy about it, and so naturally, it's also, as Swami describes it, you don't always want to interact. I mean, one of the wonderful things about just having a nice, comfortable relationship is that you don't always have to interact. I mean, David and I are silent a great deal together. Because, you know, we're together all the time. There's just nothing, a lot of times there's nothing to say. It's just very nice not to talk. I was standing in line waiting for an airplane. Two younger than me women were talking. And you know, and I saw them in the restaurant and they just sat there and they never said anything to each other, never. And they were just like, oh, can you imagine like that? And I said, easily. I just felt I had to say something. I said, you know, I'm very happily married for almost 20 years now, and my husband and I will go out and often really not say anything to each other for quite a long time. I said, we're very comfortable. We don't always have something to say. Sometimes it's just fine. I didn't know what to do. I just really didn't know what to do. But you could also see that they were just so agitated that they really couldn't imagine just that kind of comfort where you don't always have to be in some thought like this. So it's Swami says, enjoy the stillnesses between you when they come. And practice knowing that there's so many levels beyond the verbal, so many levels beyond the physical. There's just so many levels of relationships. Of course, as Marilyn's saying, it helps if you're on the same wavelength. It helps more if you are actively expanding your consciousness. You know, the more conscious you are through meditation or other practices of yourself on other levels, the more intuitive you become, the more, in fact, something is happening when you're not talking, instead of just sinking into subconsciousness. But any couples that live together for a long time, there just becomes some melding of auras that just isn't really about all the words that pass between you. It's just so charming to see how couples who don't look at all alike look very much alike. You know, there's no resemblance in their facial features, and yet when you look at them, they look the same. Because all those years of shared vibrations just begin to just make this loop of energy around them. But that doesn't happen if you're not actively engaged in it. You know, and you're actively engaged through appreciation. And that's why I think you can honestly say, you've never looked more lovely to me, ever. And there, I mean, I saw a cartoon like that, just an old woman, really old woman, and her really old husband, you know, just she looks at him and she makes some sort of wistful cry about what she was like as a young girl. And he just says, I look into your eyes, I see the same girl. You know, what difference does it make? The body really will go away, but the spirit can just still be right in there. If you really love someone and take the moment to look at them, they probably will look beautiful to you. They ought to. If they don't, you need to work on it. You know, you need to work on profoundly appreciating whatever it is that you're looking at. If it matters to you what a person looks like, you need to find a way to appreciate what they look like by looking at who they are, if there's nothing else to see there, so that you can honestly say that. And it just does wonders. I've teased David over the years, and he's gotten very good at it. I've reminded him that how little it takes to really keep me happy. You know, that just a very, very small, almost literally minutes a day of just real attention and appreciation. I mean, I'm saying this as a joke, but just real attention and appreciation sincerely given, it actually takes very little. Because if it's really sincerely given, most of us are not, you know, just sitting there waiting like little puppies to be petted again. Most of us have our lives to live, and we're busy, and we're not always just wanting to just say, I love you, and you love me, and I love you, and you love me, and you love me, and I love you. And, you know, after a while, it's like, you know, don't you have any other friends? But it's always just so endearing to be reminded that in the midst of everything that's going on, there's this sort of secret connection that you have. It just takes so little to do that, but if it's sincerely given, that's the oil. The wheels never run dry. Henry, you were going to say something?
Well, just to say that, because I just happened to be reading a book by a guy named Gorma, I think his name is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done he did research based couples work where he actually had couples come in a little apartment and they wired them and all that stuff. And his theory about that is one of the key things that he observed. And he called it a bid where you do something nice for the person or put some energy into the other person and then they put energy into acknowledging it. And he said the couples that are successful, that is by far the dominant pattern that they have.
Isn't that interesting? But you can see how much is implied in that. They haven't gone to sleep. They haven't taken each other for granted. Within their own hearts, they're still fresh in their relationship to each other. They have the refinement to see that that's important. I mean, there's just 1,000 things implied in that. That's very, very interesting. And when you stop doing all those things, you've often stopped doing really fundamentally important things. You know, and then sexuality also dies because people start feeling used. You never appreciate me. You never say anything nice to me. The only time you ever come close to me is when there's sex involved. And especially women will just think, I'm not interested. You know, men may feel that way too, but especially women. And you just, everything else can begin to break down around that. I'm just a paycheck to you, all the things that there are. But if there's always that's why I say it. Really, it takes so little, you get so much. It's really one of the most efficient things you can do is to just be appreciative. There was a man I knew once who gave his wife as a present. Okay. So you'll just live in terrible suspense. What did he give her? What did he give her? Maybe he gave her a break. As soon as I finish this, we'll take a break. His present to her was that every morning he gave her a compliment. That's a real smart one. Yeah, every morning he gave her a different compliment. Just think about that. I mean, whether you actually make it a Valentine or not, but just think about that every single day. Just think of something new that's really wonderful about the person you live with. I mean, maybe you repeat yourself because some things are really special, but nonetheless, very interesting, isn't it? So simple. And yet, what a great story. Okay, let's take a break. 10 minutes-ish. I think this Saturday I'm giving a Saturday seminar on guidance, inner guidance.
You have your flyer right up there.
Oh, here it is. I was wanting to say there must be something else going on besides that. Next week there's no class because we're having a retreat at Ananda Village. Many people will be there. And then we come back for 2 more. And then sometime after that, oh, look, it's already out here. Starting in July 10th, we're going to do, which is actually, I think it's about 14 weeks on the autobiography of a yogi. Okay? We did autobiography of a yogi once cover to cover. It took us 2 years, so we're not going to do the whole thing. What I'm going to do, and I will pull it together prior to this so you can call, probably going to do I'm going to draw the chapters from the ones that are on the audio book. Okay, because those are the main chapters, and also that gives you the option of listening to them instead of just reading them. And I'll have to just look at it and just figure out how many we can do. So I might end up shortening this class by 1 week from when I started, because I may end up being out of town a week that I didn't expect.
Is it Tuesdays again?
It's gonna be Tuesdays. Tuesdays is the ever eternal book study class, and then this Saturday. June 9th, we're doing a class on how to know and trust your inner guidance. Same place, same station. And this Sunday, for those of you who are Sangha members or almost Sangha members, we're having a meeting again right after Sunday service because of all this adventures in consciousness that are going on with our Guru Bhais in Southern California, SRF. So we just need to have a conversation and bring everyone up to speed, and it'll be very interesting. So plan to stay after service, munch a few bagels, and then come in, and we'll have more. Nothing like the great outstanding giant meeting we had before, but nonetheless, it'll be interesting. Okay? I think that's everything. Is there anything else I should tell people, Joe, that they...
How long?